Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
Yes, my soul, find rest in God. My hope comes from Him. Truly, He is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will not be shaken. Hi there, I'm Sandra Flack, and I just love Psalm 62, 5 through 6, especially during this crazy time in our world, in our country. I know I need rest for my soul and care for myself, and that's what we are going to be talking about today with our guest, Jane Schooler. Before we jump into that, I do want to apologize for any background noise during this crazy time. I've been recording podcasts from home, and home is where my teenage boys are, and though they go outside, they go outside and start up things like four-wheelers and lawnmowers and tractors, and then the dog barks. So if you hear any of that, hey, it's just us being real. Now, before I bring on our amazing guest, like I said, Jane Schooler will be with us today. I want to start by introducing our topic of self-care. Self-care is any activity we do deliberately in order to take care of our mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual health. Today, all parents, but especially parents of foster and adoptive kids, we must take time each day for some self-care. We can't pour out of an empty cup. All right, today, all parents, but especially foster and adoptive parents, must take time each day for some self-care. We can't pour out of an empty cup. I know I am guilty of taking care of everyone and everything else first and never leaving any time for myself. It was just sort of my, you know, oh, well, this is the way it is when you're an adoptive mom and you have a large family. But 3 weeks into this whole COVID-19 thing, and there seemed to be no end in sight of things opening up and kids going back to school, I realized I needed to do something. If the rest of my family was going to survive, if I was going to survive, I mean, you know that old saying, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy, right?
Yes.
It's true. Just ask my kids. So when I finally came to grips with the fact that my boys would not be going back to school anytime soon, I started to deliberately take some time for myself, starting with some early morning yoga, and I began reading books. I have a mountain of books, I think a lot of us do, stacked up next to my bed that I just never seem to get to, but I really decided I'm going to take some time just for myself each day and do a little reading. And then last week, I planted a garden with my 14-year-old son. I really kind of came up with that idea. I gardened years ago, hadn't done one in the more recent years just because life and busy and just didn't have time to tend a garden. But my son needs a lot of structure. He needs routine. And I was trying to think, how can we give him some routine this summer after being home all this time? And then we're home all summer. His summer camp day program has been canceled. So I thought, we'll plant a garden together, and then each morning we can weed and we can water, and it'll give both of us something to do together. But I'm finding that it's ministering to me. I'm really enjoying time in the garden as well. So since I've been going through this, I've been curious to hear what other, especially moms, are doing for soul care. So I took to Facebook Live and asked folks, what are you doing? What are you doing for soul care? For some self-care. And you responded, which I thank you so much. And some of what we heard, Lori said she exercises and takes evening rides around their farm with her husband. My friend Mary Slager, who was co-founder of this ministry, she commented that she's been reading through the Bible with her kids. And lots of folks, Marianne, Susan, lots of folks have said that they're taking rides in the car by themselves, just enjoying some quiet time in the car, driving through the country. Some folks confessed they don't do anything for self-care. Janine said, I don't do anything. Susan said, I don't do anything for self-care. But we're going to encourage them and give them some ideas on how they can start doing that. So thank you for everybody who participated. To bless our followers, we gave away a signed copy of Second Mother, a Bible study experience for foster and adoptive moms, written by my good friend Jody Tucker and illustrated by Tracy Laux. Both ladies are adoptive moms, and they've recently been guests on this podcast. So if you want to hear their stories, you can go back and listen. I believe their episodes 218 and 219. But we put the names in a glass jar of all of the folks who, all the moms who commented on that Facebook Live post. We pulled out one winner, and Susan Marie Bennett won the copy of Second Mother. And we had so much fun. We're going to give away another book. So I'm going to be taking to Facebook Live again this week, later this week. So stay tuned on our social media for that. And I'll be doing it on my personal Facebook page. So you'd have to go to Sandra Flack and follow me there so that you can see when we go live. And we're going to be giving away a book that Jane Schooler and I are going to be talking about today. And it's not a book that I wrote or she wrote, but it's an amazing book that we're going to talk about, that we can learn more about some self-care. So we're going to get to that today. So let's get started with our amazing guest. I am thrilled to have Jane on the show. I know that you're going to be blessed and encouraged. Jane Schooler is an adoptive mom herself. She's a trainer, a speaker, and a child development specialist for Back to Back Ministries, and the author of Wounded Children Healing Homes and the book Telling the Truth to Your Adopted Child. Please welcome my friend Jane Schooler. Hey, Jane.
Hi, my friend. Thank you so much for asking me to be on. I have so looked forward to this.
I've looked forward to it too. I know you were on a number of years ago, and typically every year we see each other, our one time a year meeting in person at the CAFO conference, and that's been postponed till fall. So I'm thrilled that we're getting to connect this way.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, at least we're not meeting in the bathroom. I think last time it was the ladies' room we bumped into each other in at CAFO.
Probably. No telling. Yes. And it's always a quick hello, never any time.
Yes. So I'm glad that we have this time today for this great conversation. So I can't wait to get to it. So I really want to talk with you about the impact this COVID-19 shutdown is having on children. All children, but especially children with trauma histories. So those of us who are foster and adoptive moms, and many of our listeners are, they can identify with this. So Jane, what effect do you see this having on our kids?
You know, Sandra, we've all been stuck at home. And now that things are beginning to open up, I've been out driving around and running errands. And I've been driving by playgrounds that have the yellow caution tape wrapped around all of the playgrounds. And my heart began to sink for what is happening to all of our children as a result of this. And so just really in the last week or two, this has become a real concern and passion for me. I don't know exactly where that's going to take us in this conversation, but I am absolutely certain, and I've been doing some reading about it, that our children are deeply impacted in every single developmental area. When you think about physical development, emotional development, cognitive development, all of those areas, our kids are going to be taking lots of steps backwards. And I'm talking about every child, not just the kids with history of trauma or kids in foster care, but every single child there's going to be long-term impact of this unless we come at it with a different angle, I think.
Wow. So damaging. I think that I don't think people are realizing, and I'm so excited to have this conversation with you, and it's coming up more and more with those who are working in child welfare and those that we've talked to, is the impact of this is more damaging, I believe, than the virus itself.
No question about that. And what we are finding and what I'm reading from incredible researchers is that all of our children are living in high levels of chronic stress.
Yes.
That their bodies are just pumping it out. And the interesting thing about that, chronic stress lowers the immune system. So we are thinking about protecting our kids when really we are setting them up for even more damage with the immune system not to say all the other areas that are deeply affected by this. We are seeing high levels of depression in small children. Kids are being are connecting with devices. They spend their time on devices, on the couch every single day. I have a friend whose 9-year-old daughter goes to sleep crying every single night. The traumatic separation these kids had, one day they're in school, the next day, and I'm talking about all children, but when you think about kids with history of trauma and separation, what is that going to do? It's already doing it to them.
Yes. Yeah. It made me think of talking about this traumatic separation in, because I've talked to some adoptive moms who've adopted internationally and their kids came home from institutions. There's an abrupt end to that old life for these children into this new life. I saw that with my kids. And although we as parents know that the old life they're leaving behind is nothing, you know, the new life they're coming to is so much better than the life that they left behind. But initially, the kids don't know that. They just know that everything they knew is over and all those people they knew are gone abruptly. And now here I am in a whole new world, family, you know, in a whole new country. So there's behaviors that come along with that. There's a lot of fear and anxiety in kids, and everything that goes along with that. And this in a way sort of paralleled that, because all of a sudden they're not in school anymore. And that whole life that they knew of their routine days of going to school and being with their schoolmates and their teachers and everyone, that whole routine just suddenly abruptly stopped. And although that does happen, they take summer breaks, there's a closure that comes. Teachers work really hard to transition kids at the end of the school year to the next school year. There's moving up days and there's a lot of year-end activities and all of that. And none of that is happening. And so I know the first 9 weeks my son was home, he didn't see a single solitary classmate. And he's in a special needs class, so I think the teachers were thinking it would be chaos to get the kids all together in the same call. But I asked for it. I said, could you please see if you could do one of these calls where the other students are involved, just so these kids can see each other at least one more time. So they did arrange that, and it was crazy, you know, and the girls were giggly and the boys were rolling their eyes, but they got to see each other and have that connection and have a little bit of closure. But, you know, the trauma that this is causing far outweighs whatever COVID-19 would have done.
Right. No question. No question in my mind. And I talked to several adoptive moms who brought home older kids internationally. And those kids who are now teenagers are reverting to behavior that orphanage behavior.
Yes.
Things that they were doing. So we're talking about kids regressing, being triggered back to where that orphanage experiences were. Yes. So I think when we're going to look back, and I hope those of us with a strong heart for kids and those in child welfare begin to speak up about this and really, in fact, Sandra, this morning, I made a call to our local Parks and Recreation director. She wasn't there. I think, in fact, she probably just called back. I saw on my phone. But I want to go up the ladder. Not that I can have a strong voice, but I have to speak out as a trauma-informed specialist, as a person who understands what happens to kids. And so we have to do something, because the traumatic separation, there's something that's called ambiguous loss. And that means people, now our lives disappear and we never know what happens to them.
Yes.
That happened to our kids. The kids that are the center of our life, kids in foster care and kids from orphanages, that happened. And that can trigger, this can trigger all of that, because they don't know what happened to their classmates.
Right.
Unless, and I was just thinking as we're talking, and I could probably now begin to talk about this for hours. We are made for connection. We are made for physical connection. We are made for physical touch. We are made to connect, eye contact, and all of that we are created for. And this has been broken, and it is not healthy. And so I think those of us in child welfare and those in orphan care need to speak up. I know in Ukraine, kids were abruptly separated. They were sent home from the orphanages to place back to their towns or villages, just gone. Did you, I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that. Because of COVID-19?
Yes, many orphanages were emptied in Ukraine, and I've heard that in many locations around the world. The orphanages, the kids were sent back to who knows what. And they are already hearing that the abuse reports in Ukraine are up. I can't remember who was telling me all of this, but yeah, it's true. And it comes from people who know. So that's the problem. And I think we are called to, okay, here's the problem, but what do we do about it?
Yeah.
And so I think there are a number of things, not only those of us who, you have a great voice, you have a audience, you have a voice, people understand who you are. I think we're called to begin to stand up in a very respectful, evidence-based, informed way. To say this is what's going to happen to our kids. This is a long-term impact. So I think that's critically important. So I think one of the first things that we can do as a strategy is have people come around us with a similar voice and begin to express to those who are making decisions the long-term impact on our children, not only all children, but particularly those that are vulnerable. We could talk for hours about what is happening inside these vulnerable families. A high level of stress, no money for food, the level of abuse that is going on. And I think we're going to see that number escalate once people begin to have children in daycare centers or some level of exposure where people begin to report high levels of abuse because of the stress on the parents.
Yeah. And that's, I've read that 20% of child abuse reports, 20% of the calls into Child Protective Services are made nationwide by school teachers and administrators.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And without those folks having eyes on kids, so it'll look like right now that calls for child abuse are down, but that's only because eyes aren't on kids.
Right.
Child abuse is escalating, reports are down, and moving forward, that's just, the lid is going to blow off of that, and I think there's going to be a huge tidal wave of kids coming into foster care in the coming months when we finally have kids out in the daylight and teachers and administrators and daycare staff looking at them and having eyes on them.
Oh, absolutely. And you might say, well, the teachers are in contact with those kids. No, they're not, not in that way. And I have a school teacher that teaches in a low income area in a town near here. And we were sitting down the other night and I've been talking to her what this has all been like. And she said, 25% of my kids connect online for class. 25%. And these are kids that she had all day, had her eyes on all day. And she said a number of their parents don't have phones or they work and these kids are left home in charge of their own education. So I think we're going to see some long-term impact of this far beyond what anybody making decisions for COVID-19, social distancing and all of that ever could have dreamed of.
Yeah. Yeah. The social distancing and the remote learning not working for our kids. It's detrimental.
It's not working. But we could stay parked on this. And I think as you and I in this world and those who listen to you need to offer solutions and think of solutions for our kids. And I think, as I mentioned, I think becoming a voice.
Yes.
And that's number one, is the becoming a voice. And as hard as it may be, for those who have foster kids at home, particularly, many of our foster kids haven't seen their birth parents in reunification efforts for months.
Yeah.
All the visits are shut down. And it's not the same seeing dad and mom on the screen as it is. I've talked to several child welfare workers who the kids were on the edge of reunification, of going home. They were preparing. Maybe some kids were a week or two short of going home. That's all off. And so I think as hard as it is when we're thinking about what do kids need in this time is a calming presence of their parent.
Yeah.
And that's a lot harder to do than it is for me to just say.
Yeah.
There's an amazing book. My husband's read it and I haven't had a chance. He reads about one book a week. I always like to get it after he does because he marks it up. And so I read what he marks up. But it's a brand new book by Daniel Siegel. It's called The Power of Showing Up. And it's an amazing book, according to him, and that we have to show up with our kids with our mental presence, that we're really connecting with them, and our emotional presence. And we're going to talk about self-care in a minute. As I said, that's easy for me to do, to say that it is for parents to do in this high stressful time, because parents are also marinating in toxic stress.
Yes.
Many of them are. So I think another thing that to help parents with strategies in this time is that parents really understand that there's meaning behind behavior. This is something all of us teach, and to understand these kids who may be acting out, that's coming out of grief and loss.
Yes.
Out of this not only traumatic separation from their school friends, but from their any kind of connection with their biological families. And so that's huge.
So Jane, what I know there are principles and strategies to help parents help our kids who are, especially our kids with trauma histories. So during this time when our kids have, they have stress levels increasing, they've got anxiety, all because of this COVID thing, they're experiencing grief and loss. Can you give us one thing at least that we as parents can do to help our kids through this time?
I think one of the most important things, this concept of maximize a sense of felt safety, their children feel safe. Yes. But I think within that is predictability. Some of our, and you know that, you've talked about that, some of our kids absolutely cannot function unless there's predictability. The classroom provided that. That school routine provided that. Yes. That is all lost. And I think I feel safe enough when I have predictability. And I think the one thing parents could look at and said, how am I providing a predictable day for my children?
That is so important. I know my youngest needs predictability to feel safe. And even before the COVID-19 thing and the shutdown, even before that, for years, it is a common thing for him to ask me every day, what are we doing tomorrow? What are we doing next week? What are we going to do next year? Like, he needs to know what's coming. And then during this time, how do I answer those questions? I don't really know if and when school is going to open up. I don't really know. So I had to be very careful to make it predictable for him. A lot of days I'll say, well, tomorrow we're going to do exactly what we did today, mainly because there's not that many options, but we're going to do your schoolwork. We're going to go for a walk. Now I'm weaving in the gardening in the morning after breakfast. We're going to go out and we're going to check the garden and we're going to water it and weed it. So I'm trying to build in because I know he needs that. So even though we really can't predict how these things are going to play out, I know I'm in upstate New York and I know certain areas of our state, we're supposed to move to phase two next week of reopening, the first week of June. And just yesterday, now we're recording this podcast ahead of its release. So the first week of June, we were supposed to move into phase two. And now on May 28th, the governor came out and said, oh, no, I'm changing that. So like he's moved, like it just changes and we have no control over that. So, everybody thought they were going to be able to go out and get haircuts next week. Well, now, no, you can't. So, I've had to self-regulate. So that way I'm not, because I know I loved what you said about toxic stress spilling over. Well, we can, our stress spills over onto our kids. And if my kids know that I'm stressed, it immediately triggers their anxiety. So I have to self-regulate. So I learned early on when I went to the grocery store, especially in the early days of the shutdown, and there was no meat and there was no produce or what, I mean, it was traumatizing to me for the first time in my life to go to a grocery store in my hometown and realize there's no flour and there's no sugar on the shelves. This is crazy. You know, I didn't feel right about that, you know, but I couldn't come home and say, oh no, there's no, you know, because that triggers a fear in my child. So I had to self-regulate. So, you know, those routine is as much structure and as much routine as we can give our kids definitely helps them to feel safe. And that's key during this time.
Yeah. And that's what we're talking about, that calming presence. And that's going to kind of flow over into what we're going to talk about in a minute, and that is self-care. But yes. So how do we maintain this calming presence in this horribly stressful time?
Yeah, and that's exactly, I want to go there now. Let's talk self-care. So why is it so important for especially parents to focus on themselves? Self-care, you know, for me many years as a parent, I was too busy to, you know, I always came last and I took care of everybody else first. I could excuse it because we had a large family and we were busy and all of these things. And I homeschooled at the time for many years. Why is it important that especially parents, this is important for all parents, but especially those with kids with trauma histories, why is self-care so important? And what would you recommend for us weary parents?
Awesome. We'll talk about that. I just did a 6-hour webinar with a foster parent group, and most of them gave them, it was really fun. In the afternoon, it was on self-care. And in the afternoon, one of the foster parents, she stayed online with her computer, but she was in a hammock. And I've got a picture of that. It's hilarious. I said, what a better picture for a webinar on self-care than in a hammock. But anyway, self-care is critically important. As you mentioned earlier, we cannot pour from an empty cup. If we don't put anything in it, we were not designed to be running 100 miles an hour. And many, many of us think that self-care is selfish. And it is not. It is taking care of the gift of life that God has given us so that we can give to others. That's a Parker Palmer statement. But so self-care is critically, critically important. But I think we have to look a little bit deeper. What do we mean by self-care? And we are doing a workshop in Austin, and a woman came up, this was on self-care, and a woman came up to me and said, if you're going to tell me to take a walk and take a bath, I'm leaving. Because that's, she said, I've heard that. If we go online and look at self-care, that's what we're going to get. But we discovered the book, The Sacred Rest. And I'd like to talk a little bit about what Dr. Smith shared in that book as how a whole new way to look at self-care, and it's looking at it as the rest that God intended us to have.
I love
she's a medical doctor who nearly lost her practice and literally her life because she did not take care of her life, her own life. And so this book comes out, she's very vulnerable in the book, and it comes out of her life experience. And so she talked about 6 areas of self-care, or 6 areas of rest. And the first one is physical, which we know that. And that's, I'm a professional nap taker in the afternoon since we've been home. I hope not everybody in my world is listening to this, but between usually 1:30 and 3, I take a nap. I've got some physical stuff going on that inhibits my good night's sleep, so I give myself grace. But anyway, so the physical is what we call passive rest. That's nap taking, that's sleeping at night. But the one I had never thought about, and this is something literally I believe everybody can do, and she called active rest. And that is recapturing something in your life that used to give you great joy, but you don't do it anymore because you think, number one, you're not worthy to do it because you got all these kids. It's selfish to do it. And I discovered that active rest principle about 10 years ago. And I was burning the candle, so to speak, at both ends, writing full-time pastor's wife and full-time working in child welfare and a trainer, way too much going on. Wow. And I discovered that I needed to do something else to take care of my life. And so I asked myself, what did I used to do that used to give me great joy that I'm not doing anymore? And that was playing tennis, Sandra. And so I went back. I played tennis my entire growing up. Hadn't picked up a racket in, this is hard to say, 40 years. That's unbelievable. So wow. I went back to tennis. I joined a tennis league and they put me in the senior league. It was cheaper, so that was okay. senior category. But 7 years of playing tennis, 3 years ago, I ended up having to have double knee replacement. And then that failed. So I had to have knee revision and I'm still in recovery. So obviously I can't play tennis anymore. But God gave me back the love of music, playing piano, and of all crazy things, doodling and brush lettering. I'm not an artist, but he put those in me. He said, this is your active rest now.
Yeah.
So I love in that book you shared, it had coloring pages. That's active rest.
Yes.
So there's a physical, mental rest. And I think in our day and age, mental rest, we turn off the TV and quit listening to everything.
Yes.
Because our kids hear it. We respond to it. We might need to check in with what's going on briefly, but to keep that going and going and going. So mental rest is taking care of those things that clutter my brain. And oftentimes we go to sleep and our brain starts going and going. It's cluttered with so many things. Yes. And I found when that happens to me, what I do is begin just stepping into an attitude of gratitude. Thanking the Lord for this and this. We know if you Google, what does an attitude of gratitude do literally to your brain? It's amazing. So taking care of the mental clutter. Another one is the emotional rest. And basically what that means is I allow myself to be authentic and deal with what's real. I take off the mask. The masks we wear to cover what's really going on inside are very heavy. And if we learn to do this, this book would be a great adoptive mom support group study or foster mom support group study. Anybody actually, but that's kind of where our heart is. And then we have the spiritual rest. And in our world, we call that the Sabbath. And I know some amazing families in our back-to-back ministry that from, and we have started that same practice, although we're empty nesters, it's a lot easier for us to do. But from 5 o'clock on Saturday to 5 o'clock on Sunday is considered our family Sabbath. And we don't do any work. We become more relationally intentional. So families that you have kids at home, let's say we're putting the devices away. 5 o'clock Saturday to 5 o'clock Sunday. No one's on devices other than a phone call. And so you do intentional family time, a game night, all of those things that say we're going to rest as a family. We're going to play. Even you think that's rest. Yes, that's active rest. Ah. Play as a family. So what could we do in that Sabbath time? And then there's social rest, and that's been really hard, but that's making sure we stay connected to each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of crazy. We know what God says, you need connection, and we're having a world problem that says social distancing. And those don't get along well together. and the last one is sensory rest. Think about the device, how many are on devices now, and the noise and all of that going into our brain, that we have intentional times where we're not on. I am so glad when I pick up my phone or my iPad and says, your viewing time is down by so many hours this week. Yay.
Yay.
Those are the kind of areas of rest I think we really need to think about.
I love that. And so many things came to mind when you were sharing those. I know when you said, the mom was in the hammock during that webinar.
Yes.
We visited some family members, for a picnic outside on Memorial Day, and they had a hammock set up in the yard. So my 14-year-old son, and he has sensory processing issues and whatnot. he got in that hammock, and it was the kind of a hammock that kind of swallowed him right up. He was cocooned in this hammock.
Oh.
And he was very anxious about, even though it was a small family picnic, he knew the family members. It was not at our house, it was at their house. So that's some change for him. He feels safer at home right now, but we had him go with us, but he got in that hammock and that was it. He needed that. He felt safe in that space. We were outside. He loved it. We came home from that picnic and I ordered one of those hammocks because I'm having, his, not only is home a safe place for him, but he would prefer to be in his room. So during the day, I have to kind of drag him out. He likes to turn on worship music and he rocks. He still has that, that he learned, to self-soothe from the orphanage. But so, we let him do that. He turns on worship music. But in this situation, he could listen to worship music and rock the entire day and never leave his room. I have to be very intentional in bringing him out and giving him things to do and interacting. And we play a game and, he's got schoolwork to do. But I felt like, oh, this hammock,
awesome.
I can get him outside in the summertime. So things like that. I love that.
Does he know it's coming?
Yes. Oh, yes. We came home and he picked the color out and he's anxiously awaiting the delivery. So that's going to be coming soon. And then when you mentioned the mental rest and gratitude, many, many years ago, I read the book by Ann Voskamp, 1,000 Gifts. And she challenged her readers in that book because she had done it to write down 1,000 things that she was thankful for. Many years ago, I started doing that, and that's part of my everyday morning quiet time. I have a thankfulness journal, and I just make a list of things that I'm thankful for. It could be now, especially with the beautiful weather, I can hear the birds chirping when I'm up in the morning and the window is open, or, it's going to be a sunny day finally. A good cup of coffee, whatever it is, I list all of those things that I am thankful for. I give the glory to God for them, but I make that list and it really is part of, it does minister to me because you can see all that God has done instead of getting caught up in what the news is saying and what is going on in the world. So many wonderful principles there. So the book is The Sacred Rest. And who is the author again, Jane?
Her name is Dr. Smith. I should have looked it up. But I don't have her exact name, but it's Dr. Smith is the doctor's name.
Awesome. I just ordered two of those books because we just did a Facebook Live and did a giveaway of the Second Mother Bible Study. And I just ordered two books, two of the Sacred Rest books. And one is for me, and then one good. I'm going to do a Facebook Live, and we're going to be giving that away. And I know I can look this up, The Sacred Rest.
I just think it would be, and I'm sitting here thinking, how could we offer to do this online as an adoptive parent group, or just talking about those things? I think it'd be a great
book like a book club. That, so it's Sandra Dalton Smith.
Yes, ma'am.
The author of The Sacred Rest, and you can find it anywhere good books are sold, Amazon, wherever. Jane and I are not making a commission on the sale of this book.
No.
It's just a book that Jane knows has ministered to her and countless others, and we want to share that with our listeners because we really want to minister to and bless and encourage especially foster and adoptive moms, but everyone who's listening. So we're going to do that. I ordered it. So stay tuned for our social media so you can get a chance to actually win that. Now, Jane, you mentioned back-to-back ministries. So I want to get to that. You're on staff with Back-to-Back. It's an international nonprofit committed to helping orphaned and vulnerable children. Their co-founder and co-executive director, Beth Guckenberger. We had her on our show a number of years ago as well. She's an author of several books. She's an adoptive mom. Amazing ministry, Back-to-Back. They're offering something called Trauma-Free World. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's a whole brand new division of Back-to-Back. 6 years ago, Dave and I had the opportunity to come to Back-to-Back and bring to them the ever-changing, ever-developing of our what we call Trauma Competent Caregiving Training Series. It's a 9-module training series. And what God has done with that, it's literally exploded around the world. It has been people from over 68 countries have ever either been in our training directly or trained by people we've trained. And it's been translated into now 9 languages. And so what we did, Back to Back decided to do was create a division totally dedicated to training. So Trauma Free World is a sister organization to Back to Back. It's traumafreeworld.org, and it's brand new. We have online trauma training on there, and we're going to be adding and building all the resources we can. It's only 2 months old, but it's in a place where people can get online trauma training. We have different levels. We have training for volunteers, for mission guests. There's a 90-minute overview of our series, and then there's a 3-hour intro to trauma on the website. So it's our training arm of Back to Back Ministries.
Now, would that be training for foster and adoptive parents or orphan ministries?
All of them. All of the above. Church ministries. One of the things, Sandra, it's still in the I hope they say yes stage, but God has given me a vision for a brand new book totally dedicated to trauma-informed care with children and youth ministries. It's at a publisher now. It's past 2 steps. It has 1 more step to go before there's a yes. But that's been a real burden because this website training, this online training, anybody, church leaders, ministry leaders, anybody, we have kids with trauma in our congregations. It's going to be even worse when the doors are opened back up.
Yes.
And they're going to be dealing with levels of behavior problems they've never seen before.
Wow. So I was just thinking about how many Christians adopt and do foster care now. So those children are in our churches, and church ministry staff aren't necessarily equipped for the behaviors. But really, and now you just like, you know, mind blowing, but COVID-19 is actually traumatizing all of our children right now.
Absolutely traumatizing all of our children. So, you know, mere separation, mere abrupt separation can have long-term effects in these kids because it gets in their emotional memory and it's going to be triggered as they grow up. Is this going to happen again? Am I safe and secure in my school? Am I going to be in school on Friday and it's shut down on Monday? Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see some long-term effects and studies on this.
Yeah.
And that made me think. Could we have done it differently? The big question is, should it have been done differently? I think we're going to find yes.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and even when you're saying that, I was thinking about, you know, what my son's school, he's in a special educational classroom. Those kids actually get an alert beforehand. They're told, today we're going to have a fire alarm, because schools have to do, you know, they have to have a fire alarm. They have to do the training for a fire drill. Is that what it's called? Right. A fire drill. But these kids, you know, that would trigger some stuff in kids, whether it's a child with autism or a child with special needs because of trauma. They need to know ahead of time, you know, at 1 p.m. the fire alarm bell is going to ring. It's a drill, and this is what we do for a drill. That group of kids is alerted to that ahead of time because that's traumatizing and triggering for them. They need to know that is coming, but, you know, we don't know, and there's so much fear-mongering going on in the news, and if parents get swept away with that, then our kids are experiencing those fears, and they are wondering, is, you know, I'm going to go to school today, but am I going to go to school next week or tomorrow, or are we going to be able to have an entire school year? Right now, our kids don't even know if they're going to be able to go to school in September.
Yes, absolutely, and what I'm hearing in Ohio is kids will go 2 days and home 3. So what does that do to working parents? So it's a matter of prayer. It's a matter for the church community to step up and say, okay, here's a problem, but what are we going to do about it? How can we step up and meet the needs of families in our community?
Wow. Absolutely. We have to be the voice. We have to be mm-hmm. not silent on this for our kids, for all kids everywhere. We need to be a voice and have this conversation, demand this conversation.
Absolutely.
So Jane, getting back to, so I just want our listeners to know traumafreeworld.org to be able to connect with you for that for trauma training and the modules and all that are going to be part of it.
Well, what it is, the first part is the 3 hours, but also online, actually in July, we're doing our trauma series, 3 hours, 6 Fridays in a row. So people can jump online for the full advanced trauma training. And all that information is on the website.
Yep. And that is traumafreeworld.org.
Yes.
So we'll make sure that we put links to all of the sites you mentioned and everything we talked about in this episode, which is episode number 224 of the Orphans No More podcast. We'll put links in the show notes, links in our correlating blog post that will go along with this episode. All of that will be on our website, justicefororphansny.org. So Jane, as we wrap up today, you know, any last thoughts? What's on your heart you want to make sure our listeners hear today?
That as believers, we have hope. We don't need to be swallowed up in fear, but to, as you prayed before the program began, to stand on unshakable ground because we have a relationship with an amazing Heavenly Father.
That's right. He is our fortress. And we will not be shaken.
Yeah. Not be shaken.
Yes. That's right. Oh, Jane, thank you so much for joining us today and for everything that you're doing to make the world a better place for foster and adoptive families and all children, really, because I'm praying that you'll continue to be a voice. I know I want to continue to be a voice. We need to stand for our kids.
Absolutely. And it's been a great joy to see you and to talk with you.
Yes, thank you so much. Love having you here and want to thank our listeners for tuning in for this episode of Orphans No More. I hope you were inspired and encouraged today. I know I am. And we want to hear from you. Send us an email, leave us a comment at justicefororphansny.org. Let us know how this podcast, the Orphans No More podcast, has inspired and encouraged you. We want to know. And if you enjoyed this show, please leave us a review, tell your friends about it, share this on social media. We really appreciate that, getting the word out for us and helping us. So more families, more adoptive and foster families have access to these conversations. I am your host, Sandra Flack, and I've been giving away a bunch of books, but I can't wait to give away my own book that I've authored, and it's called Orphans No More, A Journey Back to the Father. Stay tuned to this podcast and our social media when it'll be released. I'm diligently working. It's with editors now, so we're hoping that it'll be available late summer. So stay tuned for information on that. And you can find and follow more episodes of this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and on our website at justicefororphansny.org. And find us on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to continuing this conversation and being with you all next week on Orphans No More.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.